Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on fairy tales when we come back. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was about 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today, it's down to 38 days or less. You know, I know these global 2,000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, disease, plague, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years or so, they say, from the Club of Rome. Well, in Revelation chapter 6, the God of Israel told us exactly the same thing in essentially the same words. He talked about false prophets and war and famine and disease. Well, back in 1920, about half of the people of the United States lived on the land as subsistence farmers, producing their own food and food for the rest of the world and food for you and I. Today, we Americans have chosen to live in our cities, and now only about 3% of us live on the land. Now, that means about 97% of us, then, are no longer self-sufficient in our food production. Now, we produce grain for export, all right, and then we turn around and import grapes from Chile and tomatoes from Mexico, berries from Guatemala, and our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this global 2000 world population control program. And these globalists, with their genocide agenda, have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause, unless you and I live for our cause. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. Just call and ask. Number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study if you're online. Why don't you go to the website? It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about fairy tales, and boy, there's a lot of them out there. I told you about a little girl, 8 years old, has her fairy house down here in the woods behind the house. That's kind of cute. An 8-year-old girl can't tell reality from fairy tales, can't tell reality from fantasy. Adults can't do that either. Adults live in a fairy tale world. We listen to Katie Couric and Brian Williams on the news, and we think that we're well informed. The average voter gets out, and he wants to vote for the right guy. He wants to participate in democracy. But if you ask the average person to write a 300-page essay on the M3, M2, and M1 money supply, I don't think he could do that. Don't you think that people, before they vote for the president of the United States, I'd understand something about monetary policy or the monetary expansion of M3, the inflation rate at 18% with the expansion of M3. It would seem like to me that you probably ought to know a little something about trade policy before you select the person that you're going to have go to Washington and represent that trade policy to the world. I'm not sure that I ought to be voting because I'm not sure that I understand enough about the issues that presidents and politicians have to grapple with. But I certainly do wonder about people when they go out and vote, when they go out and act, and they act irresponsibly and irrationally. Now, last time we talked about this thing of evolution, I said evolution is a fairy tale. And we just took one aspect of evolution. I went through the numbers, and I said, hey, listen, guys, all you evolutionists out there, don't get mad at me now. I took your numbers. I took your story, and I just analyzed your story over the year. And it's so full of holes. It's so ridiculous. It is so bizarre. It is so off the wall as to be preposterous. I just took one. Now, it could well be that you've got some points and no doubt that there's some truth that goes along with this thing of evolution. There are some real scientific facts that you can point to, but when you put all those scientific facts together with your philosophies and your numbers, they don't add up. And I said, well, that's a fairy tale. So I suggest that you evolutionists get your numbers together, rework your program, come up with a story that makes sense. But the other side of the coin, the evolutionists will say, well, religion is preposterous and religion is incomprehensible. It's a fairy tale, and I couldn't agree with you more. So I thought, well, let's take a look at a couple of three fairy tales that we get from religion. And here's the deceptive part of religion. The religious guy goes out and he holds up the Hebrew Bible. And he says, I'm getting my information out of this book. And he's a liar, and he knows he's a liar. He doesn't get his information out of that book. He gets some of his information out of that book, and then he cites it off point and out of context. He's not only a liar, he's a damn liar, and he knows he's lying to you. And I'm going to show you a couple of three examples of that here today. So if you're an evolutionist over here, I don't want you to get mad at me and say, well, that guy Gordon's a religious kook, and on top of that, he's out of touch with reality. No, I'm the guy that remember said yesterday, could it be that there is an answer out there, but it doesn't lie in evolution, and it doesn't lie in religion either? Could it be that both of them are wrong, and that the truth lies over here somewhere else that we haven't considered yet? Let me put that before you today, and let's see where that one goes. Let's take a look, first of all, at Easter. Where does this custom of Easter comes from? Well, it doesn't come from the Bible. The practice of Easter comes from religion. It comes from Catholicism, Christianity. It comes from Protestant theology. The Buddhists don't practice it. The Muslims don't practice it. But the Christians practice it, and they say, they claim that they're getting it out of the Bible. That's not true. Now, the celebration of Easter was observed at different times by the Eastern and Western Roman Empire. In fact, Hillel II had changed the Jewish calendar prior to that time, and even today, Passover is not observed by Jews in accordance with biblical instruction as to the time. After much debate, the Nicene Council of 325 AD decreed that Easter should be celebrated on the first Sunday after the vernal equinox. This makes the date vary from March 22nd to April the 25th. Now, why was so much debate necessary if Easter was a tradition passed down from the apostles? The answer is, it was not an apostolic institution. It is an invention of religion. It is an invention of man, and they had to make up some rules. Now, the historian Socrates said in the 5th century, thus much already has laid down, may seem a sufficient treatise to prove that the celebration of the Feast of Easter began everywhere more of a custom than by any commandment either of Christ or of the apostles. That was Socrates, 5th century A.D. He said, thus much already laid down by, or may seem a sufficient treatise to prove that the celebration of the Feast of Easter began everywhere more of custom than by any commandment either of Christ or of the apostles. Now, history records that the spring festivals in honor of the pagan fertility goddesses and the events associated with them were celebrated at the same time as Easter. In the year 399 A.D., the Theodosian Code attempted to remove the pagan connotation from those events and banned their observance on Easter and Christmas. People still celebrated the pagan festival in honor of Issus, and they just called it something else. They called it Easter, Ishtar. In the book On Roman Time, the Codex Calendar of 354 A.D., the author, Salzman, states that many of the rites associated with Issus were retained in the Christian celebration of Easter. Now, in Matthew 15, verses 7 through 9, the Messiah made this observation. He said, you hypocrites. Do you get that? You hypocrites. You Christian preachers out there, you hypocrites. Well, did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, this people draws nigh unto me with their mouth, and they honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. That's in Matthew 15, verses 7 through 9. Now, there's no biblical authority for the celebration of Lent either, preceding Passover. Lent was an observance connected with Babylonian worship of Astarte or Ishtar, and it has been documented that the pagan celebration of Lent has been celebrated by many religions, not even remotely associated with Christianity. Now, the 40-day celebration was observed by the Yazidis, that's the pagan devil worshippers of Kurdistan, who inherited that from the Babylonians. And it was always, or it has always been, a celebration connected with sun worship, the spring equinox. The Aztecs of Mexico, as well as the ancient Egyptians, both sun worshippers celebrated the 40-day observance in honor of Adonis and Osiris, the sun god. And Hyslop, the historian, says, among the pagans, this Lent seems to have been an indispensable preliminary to the great annual festival in connection and commemoration of the death and resurrection of Temuz, or Tammuz, which was celebrated by alternate weeping and rejoicing, and which is being observed in Palestine and Assyria in June, therefore called the month of Tammuz, in Egypt about the middle of May, and in Britain sometime in April. To conciliate the pagans to nominal Christianity, Rome, pursuing its usual policy, took measures to get the Christian and the pagan festivals amalgamated. So by a complicated but skillful adjustment of the calendar, it was found no difficult matter, in general, to get paganism and Christianity, now far sunk into idolatry, in this, as in so many other things, to shake hands. The Encyclopedia Britannica reconfirms the statements of Hyslop. The celebration in March and April that marked the death of the god also seemed to have been dramatically performed. And in Ezekiel 8, verses 14 through 16, listen to this story concerning Tammuz. Then he brought me to the door of the gate of the Lord's house, which was toward the north, and behold, there sat women weeping for Tammuz. Then said he unto me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? Turn thee yet again, and you shall see even greater abominations than these. And he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house, and behold, at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men, and their backs toward the temple of the Eternal, and their faces toward the east, and they worshiped the sun toward the east. That's in Ezekiel 8, verses 14 through 16. This worship of Tammuz, this Easter practice, this Lent abortion is called an abomination in the Bible. And you Christians go to church and you listen to your pulpit parrot up there lie to you and you love it. Come on. You love it. Easter's a lot of fun. It's a fairy tale. It's a lying hypocrisy. The Messiah called you hypocrites, and your preacher knows that, and he's a liar. He stands up there, he lies to you, and he loves it, and you love it, and it's an abomination. All right, but you didn't get it out of the Bible. That's my point. I'm not here to argue with you over your religious festivals and your practices. But when you say that you're following Jesus, or you're following the Scripture, or you're following the Bible, you're liars. It's not true. And furthermore, most of you know that it isn't true. So that's in defense now of all of you evolutionists out there who I castigated yesterday and said, you know, you people practice a lot of fairy tales over here, believing that the sun came from the Big Bang. And that was billions of years ago, and yet it's burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. And if you just went back 20 million years, the sun would have been measuring from today's size. It would have been 93 million miles in diameter, which makes it impossible then for the dinosaurs to have died 65 million years ago. So either your dinosaurs didn't die 65 million years ago, the sun isn't burning up at 5 feet an hour, uniformitarianism is a fantasy, or the Big Bang is a fantasy, or some combination thereof is a fantasy. So I agree with you evolutionists. Yeah, it's true. The religions that are foisted off on us, they're fantasies also. So the evolutionist said, you know, look, we have a choice here between evolution and religion, and between the two of them, religion is incomprehensible and is, he used a different word, but he said it's unacceptable. Well, I couldn't argue with that. That's why I suggested to you that maybe there's a third alternative out there. You know, as Carl Sagan used to observe or kind of whimsically postulate, that maybe there's life out there in outer space. Maybe there's some life out there that we haven't known about. In fact, there's a SETI program, spelled S-E-T-I, I believe it is SETI. And they've got it's down in New Mexico, they've got about, I saw the number of them, 20, I'm going to say 20, maybe 25, great big huge antennas down there, and they're broadcasting out into space. And they're looking for life out there in space. This is your tax dollars at work. So here's your United States government looking for life out there in outer space. There's a lot of life out there. In fact, the Creator here in the Bible, he reveals that there's a lot of different forms of life out there. For instance, he reveals that he lives out there in outer space. He's a space alien. Well, you know, what in the hell is a space alien? A space alien is some living creature, some living form, some life form that comes from outer space, isn't it? Somebody that comes to the Earth from someplace else is an alien. Well, it's okay. God is a space alien. And he tells us that he's got 24 elders out there at his throne. He tells us that he created the heavens and the earth, and that the earth is his footstool, and all of that's out there is his property. He owns it all. He says he owns the earth and all the inhabitants thereof, and that he's the potter and you're the clay, and who in the hell are you to argue with me over why I made you thus? And he talks a lot about seraphim and cherubim and angels and guardian angels and all kinds of life forms. In fact, Jesus gave us an indication as to how many there are. He said something on the order of, my father would send, 12 legions or 10 legions of angels? A legion, 7,000. 12 of them would be 84,000. He said, hell, he'd send 84,000 angels to rescue me here, you know, if that was part of the plan. So there's got to be thousands of these angels out there, and I don't know how many archangels there are. There's three mentioned in the Bible. So to answer Carl Sagan's question, yes, Carl, there is life in outer space, space aliens. And then there's a theory that came up some years back. Could it be that these space aliens visited planet Earth and just left off some life forms, and they evolved into what we see today? Well, it is true. They did visit planet Earth. Two of them did. Let us make man in our image. That's plural. Let us make man in our image. Two, the Father and the Son. Yes, they did. They didn't just leave some garbage behind that evolved. They specifically created all the life forms that we see on planet Earth and clearly revealed it and explained it in a book that we call the Scripture. Now, the tragedy here is that the religious people got hold of the Bible. They got hold of the Scriptures. I don't know why, but they did. Now, the Bible doesn't belong in church any more than it belongs in a whorehouse. Now, the religious people, these pagans, these idol worshippers, these people that practice fairy tales and worship the sun and the moon and the stars, picked up the Hebrew Scriptures, and now they claim that this is our religious book, and we get our teachings from this book. And of course, the evolution, anybody with a brain, anybody whose intelligence is anywhere above 80, looks at this and says, God, this is nuts. Well, I got to agree with you evolutionists. That's an understatement to say that religion is nuts. Yeah, I agree. But they didn't get this religion out of the Bible. That's my point. The Bible told you the straight facts, and you rejected it because it came from this crazy religious guy over here who's practicing fairy tales. He probably means well. I mean, a lot of those religious guys probably are sincere people who believe in those fairy tales. They just never grew past Santa Claus. They still believe in the religious fairy tales that they've learned from ancient tradition. Now listen to these. Historically records, or history rather, records the words of Hyginus, the Egyptian, who was librarian at the Palestine Library in Rome during the time of Caesar Augustus. An egg of wondrous size is said to have fallen from heaven into the river Euphrates. The fishes rolled it to the bank, where the doves, having settled upon it and hatched it, out came Venus, who afterwards was called the Syrian goddess. That Syrian goddess supposedly hatched from the egg was Astarte, from whom the title Easter came. Okay. Now, you know, that's a neat story. It rivals, you know, the Goldilocks and the Three Bears and the Hansel and Gretel and maybe Cinderella. You know, an egg fell out of the sky, and it was hatched by the fishes, and out came Venus, and here comes Astarte. Here comes Easter. Okay. That's a real neat story. Christmas is a real neat story. Just like the sun is burning 5 feet an hour, and dinosaurs died 65 million years ago. Those are all real neat stories. The tragedy of it is that they're all fantasies. They're not true. That isn't where reality is located. It's kind of like Barney and Big Bird on Sesame Street. You know, it's a fantasy world that we foist off on our children. It isn't that the children are picking up on fantasies. We are teaching these fantasies to our children. Hell, we believe in these fantasies as adults, for crying out loud. Well, isn't it time that somebody came down to Earth and said, hey, wait a minute. Let's take a look at the emperor riding that horse over there. He looks like he's buck-ass naked to me. He don't have any clothes on. Now, come on, kids. We're all adults now. Let's pay attention to reality here. To conclude, the pagan festival of Easter originated as the worship of the sun goddess, the Babylonian queen of heaven, who was later worshipped under many names, including Ishtar, Sibyl, Adia Mater, the Great Mother, or Astarte, for whom the celebration of Easter is named. Easter is not another name for the feast of the Passover, and is not celebrated at the biblically prescribed time for Passover, and the Jews don't practice the Passover. They observe it. They don't practice it. There's 52 elements to practicing the Passover. They don't do it either. This pagan festival was Christianized several hundred years after Christ. Oh, I ought to point out, his name wasn't Christ either. I know that's another story for another day, but there's no biblical authority for the celebration of Easter. So consider the implications of the following scripture upon the church today. In Malachi 3, verses 6 and 7, he says, I am the eternal and I change not, even from the days of your fathers. You're gone away from my ordinances. You have not kept them. Now return unto me, and I will return unto you, says the eternal of hosts. But you said, wherein shall we return? Now the people had gone away from the ways of the God of the Bible, and he called for them to return. They said, well, wherein shall we return? They did not think that they were doing anything wrong. The same thing's going on today. Pagan practices are being proclaimed to be Christian in nature, and many think there's nothing wrong with them. Now once more, the Creator pleads with his people to disassociate from the Babylonian apostasy, which says, come out of her, my people, that you receive not of her plagues, in Revelation 18, verse 4. All right, so there's the story on Easter. Now listen, that's one pagan festival. That's one fairy tale. Now Christmas is another. Yeah, that's another Christian fairy tale. Listen to this. The traditional customs connected with Christmas have developed from several sources as a result of the coincidence of the celebration of the birth of Christ with the pagan agricultural and solar observations at midwinter. In the Roman world, the Saturnalia, December the 17th, was a time of merrymaking and exchange of gifts. December 25th was also regarded as the birth date of the Iranian mystery god Mithra, the sun, spelled S-U-N, of righteousness. That's a quotation from the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now here's the way you foist this off. See, you've got sun, S-O-N, in English. Sun, the offspring of parents, a male child born to parents, is called a sun, S-O-N. Sounds just like sun, S-U-N, that orb up in the sky that gives us heat. All right. So these people worship the sun, the S-U-N. So when the Son of God, the S-O-N, comes, they say, oh, we are worshiping the Son of God. So on Easter Sunday morning, they get up and they go out and face the east while the sun is coming up to worship the Son, the S-U-N, of God. Well, okay, that's real cute. But it's a fairy tale. Wake up, boys and girls, it's a fairy tale. Now, I'm not here to tell you not to believe in your fairy tales. That's fine by me. I don't come here and ridicule and make fun of people. I just come here to reveal information. You can do with the information whatever you want. I'm not giving you an altar call and telling you to come give your heart to Jesus today. I'm not saying, just send your love offerings to the law school. Hell, I don't need your money. I'm not asking for it. I don't need your support. If I got your support, I'd have to teach what you want me to teach with your money. Take your money and perish with it. I'm a reporter. I came here to report facts. There's a lot of fairy tales running around out there. I thought I would reveal to you some of these fairy tales that most of us participate in, like Christmas, Easter, and New Year's, and the Rapture. And these are religious fairy tales. Now, yesterday I castigated the evolutionists. Those are fairy tales. You didn't evolve from green algae, boys and girls. You were specifically created by somebody who's pretty damn smart. Pretty talented guy came here. He's making a creation, and this creation is pretty neat. Sun works real good. the Earth is just the right distance from the sun to keep us warm, but not too hot, not too cold. We've got soil out here that produces food, which we have to eat. Evolution says, well, it's just a coincidence. Well, I don't think so. And this creator, he doesn't think so. He said, I've made everything, and it was good. I took a look around the world, and it looks pretty good to me. I looked at my body. It works very, very well. It works real good. I move my fingers, and they move very well. There's no accident involved there. I've got this opposing thumb on my hand. Works very well for me to become a tool maker. I'm a plumber by trade. Yep, works real good. And, of course, my fairy tale mentors, they tell me, well, it all just evolved that way, just a fortuitous circumstance. I call it the miracle of random selection. Just take a look at all the miracles of random selection that are out there. And let me give you a reminder here, as we're talking about fairy tales here today, let me give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily, worldwide, over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian, non-commercial law school, and is open to individuals but by pre-arrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School. Just call us and ask for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. And again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And then, finally, let me remind you that these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Hell, these people probably have their own views concerning fairy tales. But if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour or the editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about fairy tales, and today we're taking on the religious people. That's to balance out our presentation yesterday, in which I castigated the evolutionists, and now I castigate the religion. I have to agree that religion is a fairy tale, but not quite totally. You see, the religious guys, they're not dumb. They're deceivers. They're lying hypocrites, but they're not dumb deceivers and lying hypocrites. They've got an agenda. They've got a motive. They've got a motivation. They've got big business involved. These religious organizations make a lot of money. And they make money off of people by telling them these fairy tales, because the fairy tale is what the person or the people that listen to these religious guys want to hear. And so the religious guys are salesmen. They're just selling these people what they want to buy. These people cannot endure sound doctrine. They can't handle reality. And that's what our psychiatrists tell us, that fairy tales, that when you're dealing with people that can't face reality, they're in denial. It's because psychologically they just can't handle. That's why people go into depression or taking Prozac, for crying out loud. They can't handle the real world the way it is. And so Christmas, Easter, and New Year's is the religious guy's way of dealing with what he can't face, reality. Reality is what his problem is. Well, the evolution guy, he's got the same problem. He's taking a look over here and he says, oh my God, I can't face reality, so I have to believe in something. And so what I'm going to believe in, since how I don't want to accept the religious fairy tale, I've got to come up with my own fairy tale. Evolution is a religion. It's a fairy tale religion to give us an explanation of how the world got here, and what we're observing around us in a more erudite, more scholarly modality. I mean, we see everything around us. And then we listen to the fairy tales of the religious guy. We say, God, that's nuts. So we've got to come up with a competing religion of our own. We'll call it evolution. So these guys, they come up with their competing fairy tale. So we're all listening to these fairy tales. We go to our colleges and our universities and our high schools, and they're teaching us these fairy tales out of glossy books, for crying out loud. But when you look into it and you ask questions, they don't add up. They don't make any sense. Now, they didn't get Easter out of the Bible. They got it from pagan religion from times past. And I suggest that we look at the Bible not as a religious book, but as a law book, as a history book, as a science book. And the religious guy said, well, you can't get your history out of the Bible. It's full of errors. And you can't get science out of the Bible. It's not a science book. Oh, that's not true. The Bible is a science book. It's full of science. It is a history book. It's full of history. Verifiable history comes right out of the Bible. Now, of course, you've been taught that that's a lie, that that's a fairy tale. So what they do is they take the truth and they say, well, that's a fairy tale. Come over here and listen to me, because I got a better fairy tale to tell you, but it's the truth. And so this is a part of deception. What you do is you create and sow confusion by presenting so many alternatives. You got evolution, you got religion, you got the Bible. If any one of them's true, then the other two are false. That's what I pointed out to you the other day. All us paper boys are sitting here, you know, rolling our papers at the Eureka Theater. And one kid says, well, you all the rest of you guys are going to hell because you don't belong to the Nazarene Church. And then another kid comes up and says, oh, no, you're all going to hell because you don't go to the Catholic Church. And then I piped up and said, oh, no, you guys are all wrong because you're all going to hell because you didn't go to the Lutheran Church. Missouri Synod, by the way. For all you Lutherans out there that don't belong to the Missouri Synod, you're all bound for hell, fire, and brimstone because you don't have the right corporate charter. I don't know where Pastor Kohler got that out of the Bible, but it had to come from someplace. All right, so there you are. You have these fairy tales that are being put out there by, you know, well-meaning people in a lot of cases, but most of it comes from people that know better. Your preacher, when he gets up there in the pulpit and he's telling you about Christmas and Easter, he knows better than that. He's not just lying to you. He's a damn liar. He knows full well where Easter comes from. He went to seminary. He's got letters after his name, for crying out loud. Your excuse is you're a little old lady from Poughkeepsie, and you didn't go to college. All right, you got an excuse, lady, but he doesn't. Or she doesn't. You got a lot of women in there now. So this Christmas thing over here, after the triumph of Constantine, the church at Rome assigned December 25th as the date for the celebration of the feast, possibly about AD 320 or 353. That's AD. That's Anno Domini, you know, after the death of the Messiah, 320 to 350 years, they came up with Christmas. By the end of the 4th century, the whole Christian world was celebrating Christmas on that day, with the exception of the Eastern churches, where it was celebrated on January the 6th. Well, the choice of December 25th was probably influenced by the fact that on this day, the Romans celebrated the Mithraic feast of the sun god Natalis, Solus Invicti, and that the Saturnalia also came at this time. So here are the sun worshippers, you know, these pagan sun worshippers. And they've got this religion thing, and they need to graft that onto this Christian ideology. We're coming up with a new religion over here that we're going to go out and sell. You know, Pat Robertson, Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, Jerry Falwell, Jim Baker. And then you got this guy down in Louisiana. Who is that guy? Jimmy something or other. He's out here tapping horse, remember? I mean, you know, half these guys that are running around selling religion or selling big business, they make a lot of money. They make a lot of money selling fairy tales. And so the evolution guy, he looks at Jimmy Swaggart, that's his name. He looks at Jimmy Swaggart, he's down here tapping horse, and he says, well, that guy's a hypocrite. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's right, Mr. Evolutionist. But hey, believing in evolutionary philosophy is just as phony as tapping horse down in New Orleans, for crying out loud. Just because he's a lying hypocrite and teaching people about fairy tales and Christmas, Easter, and New Year's doesn't make a hill of beans as to why you and I ought to go out here and believe that the sun is burning up at 5 feet an hour and dinosaurs died 65 million years ago. Come on. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here, kids. There's more. The basis of the celebration of Christmas can be traced back to the kingdom of Nimrod in Babel, or Babel. And after the death of Nimrod, who seems to have been considered the sun god, Ninus, was born to Beltis and considered to be the reincarnation of Nimrod, God incarnate. And this is the origin of the worship of the mother and child. That's Catholicism. Because of this, Beltis, the wife of Nimrod and the mother of Ninus, become known as the mother's husband, the mother of God, the queen of heaven. This fable has been the basis of pagan worship throughout history. And this pagan worship has been adopted now by the Christians. Christians practice this pagan worship. And then they claim to get it out of the Bible. When we look in the Bible, it says it's an abomination. Now listen to this on the Christmas night. Over here in Jeremiah chapter 10, I believe it is. Jeremiah 10. And there's a little story here about Christmas trees. Listen to this. See, these people, they say, oh, we're just celebrating the birthday of Jesus. It says, hear you the word which the Eternal speaks unto you, O house of Israel. Hey, listen up, dummy. Pay attention to me. That's your God speaking. Thus saith the Eternal, learn not the way of the heathen. Did you hear that, boys and girls? Learn not. Don't learn. Put it out of your mind. Don't pay attention to the heathen. Did you get that? Learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. For the customs of the people are vain, for one cutteth a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workmen with the axe. They deck it with silver and with gold. They fasten it with nails and hammers, that it moves not. They're upright as the palm tree, but they speak not. They must needs be born, because they cannot go. Be not afraid of them, for they cannot do evil, neither is it in them to do good. What do you think that tree being cut out of the forest and decorated with gold and silver is? Can you say Christmas tree, boys and girls? Can you say, learn not the way of the heathen? Now listen, if you want to practice Christmas, get after it. But it's a fairy tale. It's an abomination. and your God told you not to do it. Now, there is in the Bible, though, some holy days, some holidays. Now, I told you there might be some third answer over here. Well, listen to this. Over in Leviticus, and that's Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. That's the third book of the Bible in chapter 23. There's some holy days over here. We call them holy days, H-O-L-Y, holy days, D-A-Y-S. That's what they're called in the Bible. So we change the Y to an I, and we call it a holiday, holy day. Now, what's the difference between a holy day and a holiday? Well, in Isaiah chapter 1, and this is Isaiah now, in Isaiah chapter 1, God made mention of that. Let's see if I can find it here for you. Here's Ecclesiastes. I'm getting close now. Just here it is. It says, your new moons and your appointed feasts, my soul hateth. They're a trouble unto me. I'm weary to bear them. And when you spread forth your hands, I'll hide my eyes from you. Yea, when you make many prayers, I will not hear. Your hands are full of blood. Hey, you Christians out there. Are you listening to this? Your hands are full of blood. And I'm sure you said, what? Why, my hands aren't full of blood. Why, I love Jesus. Oh, yeah. But you voted for George Bush, remember, in 2004? Now, so far, you Christians out there have killed 1 million Iraqis. You have made refugees out of 5 million of them. Now, that's 6 million. I don't know how many you've injured. I don't know how many have got their legs blown off, etc. Hey, listen, boys and girls, you know that war over there in Iraq is as phony as a $3 Federal Reserve note. You know that Saddam Hussein was a real jerk. But the president didn't lie to you. He said Saddam Hussein is a killer, a murderer, and he's a real jerk. And he told you the truth. And then he said Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, and he's a threat to us, and we got to go take him out. That was a lie. And that's the way deception works. You know, if we lied to you all the time, you people would know the truth. We have to tell you the truth to deceive you. George Bush deceived you, all right. And you're still involved in this war over there, aren't you? And it isn't going to stop anytime soon, I'm not sure. You know, crusading against the war. Hell, we need that war over there. We need that war to stimulate our economy. We have to have a reason for spending money to keep the economy running. War is one of the best modalities that we've come up with for keeping this deficit spending in this economy, this false weights and balances economy running. I don't deny that. I'm not here telling you to shut the war down over there. Hell, we need it. It's kind of like cancer. You know, I'm not suggesting that we should have a cure to cancer. You know, cancer is a $500 billion a year industry. We need cancer. God love all you people with cancer going to the oncologist to get cut, burned, and poisoned. We need you people. Well, it's kind of sad that 500,000 of you die every year, but, you know, I think of what you're doing to the economy, stimulating the economy, keeping all of these oncologists and cancer specialists off the streets and out of the pool halls and paying for their boats and airplanes and cars. God love all you people with cancer. Now, in chapter 23, the eternal, this is Leviticus chapter 23. Now, God has an agenda. This God, this creator, this space alien I'm telling you about. I'm not telling you about sweet Jesus now that you heard about last Sunday in church. I'm telling you about this space alien that came down here years ago and sent you a book and said, listen, let me tell you what I'm doing here. The Bible is the book that tells you, well, here's my agenda. Here's what I got in mind. Nobody reads it. Nobody pays attention to it. And that's why people are ignorant, don't know what this third alternative is. There's an alternative to religion. There's an alternative to evolution. It's the scripture. All right, now listen to this. The Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, you speak unto the children of Israel, and you say unto them, concerning the feasts of the Eternal, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my feasts. So this God, this space alien, he's got his own agenda. He's got his own feasts. Now, most of you have never heard anything about these feasts. The Jews do. I mean, the Jews know all of them. And they ain't telling either. They know what the feasts are, and they ain't telling. Number, in verse 3, he says, 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest. It's a holy convocation, and you shall do no work therein. It is the Sabbath of the Eternal in all of your dwellings. Okay? So feast number 1 is called the Sabbath, and it's the seventh day of the week. It says, 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest. Okay? Now go look at your calendar over here. We'll look at day 1 is Sunday, day 2 is Monday, day 3 is Tuesday, day 4 Wednesday, day 5 Thursday, day 6 Friday, day 7 Saturday. What do you know about that? The Sabbath is on Saturday. Now, all you Christians out there, see, you're practicing Sunday, aren't you? That's because you're sun worshipers, and that's what Sunday is. Sunday is the venerable day of Sol Invictus, the sun god. And Christians are sun worshipers, worshiping the sun god on Sunday. Can you say Sunday, sun god, boys and girls? In verse 4, he says, these are the feasts of the Eternal, even holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their seasons. In the 14th day of the first month at even is the Lord's Passover. Got that? On the 15th day of the same month is the feast of unleavened bread unto the Eternal. 7 days, you must eat unleavened bread. That's new. Have you ever heard of a festival in which we eat unleavened bread for 7 days? Have you ever heard of a festival called the Passover? Have you ever heard of Sabbath keeping? You didn't learn that in your church, boys and girls. You've got fairy tales like sun worship on Sunday, and Easter, and Lent, and Christmas, New Year's. He goes on, he talks about Pentecost, and the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, and the Feast of Tabernacles, last great day. There's seven of these annual festivals. They're all listed right here. They're all talked about. They're all explained here in Leviticus chapter 23. When was the last time your pastor ever stood up, you know, on Sunday morning in the pulpit and explained to you Leviticus chapter 23? Have you ever heard that? Has your preacher ever got up in church and explained to you Exodus 20, the Ten Commandments? Christian preachers do not teach Leviticus 23 or Exodus 20. Christian preachers do not teach the Ten Commandments or the Holy Days of God. They teach fairy tales. They teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And the lying hypocrites pick up the Bible and say, this is where we're getting this. Now, of course, anybody with an IQ above 80, you know, looks at that and says, well, that's preposterous poppycock. Well, welcome to reality, all you evolution guys out there. Hey, preposterous poppycock. Yeah, that's, I agree with you. You're right. But there's a third alternative out here, see, that you guys aren't concerned with. You're not considering. That's my point. Now, I'm going to suggest to you, if you want to know more about this Christmas and Easter and these fairy tales, there's a book here called Too Long in the Sun, and it's written by a guy named Reeves, or Rives, I'm not quite sure how he pronounces it, but I'm going to call him Reeves, R-I-V-E-S. I don't know his first name. Let's see if I can find out for you. It's called Partakers Publications, P.O. Box 23031, that's 23031, Charlotte, North Carolina. He's got a webpage, it's called www.toolong.com. It says right here, visit our website, www.toolong.com, Partakers Publications, P.O. Box 23031, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28227, that's 28227. I always like this guy here. He says, this book is not written as a form of entertainment. Do not read past this page unless you're willing to take responsibility for the information contained herein. I thought that was pretty good. Anyway, this guy's name is Richard. His name is Richard M. Reeves, R-I-V-E-S. 22 chapters, 251 pages. I don't know what the price is. Somebody sent this to me years ago. And Big John, and if you're listening, Big John, thank you very much. It was Big John turned me on to this years and years ago. It must be 15 years ago by now. Big John was a smoker. He's probably dead by now. Smoking kills people. Anyway, this guy, Reeves, wrote a book called Too Long in the Sun. Boy, that'll tell you where the bodies are buried. No two ways about that. And there's one more item over here I got to tell you about. It's called the Rapture. 70 million evangelical Christians believe in this thing called the Rapture. One time a guy came in here to law school, and he asked my wife, he said, Mrs. Gordon, do you believe in the Rapture? And my wife said, you bet I do. Yes, sir, I believe in the Rapture. It happened 2 years ago. And the guy looked at her with a blank stare like, huh? This Rapture thing, for all of you evolution guys out there that don't know what it is, they believe that when the second coming is about to occur and the Great Tribulation is upon us, Great Tribulation spoken of by the Messiah in Matthew 24, for instance, that they're going to be protected from it, that they're going to be taken and hidden away someplace for this 3.5 years, and they won't have to go through this Great Tribulation. That's a fairy tale. It's a nice fairy tale. It's the kind of fairy tale that I like. I would like to be taken away to a real neat place of safety while this Great Tribulation is going on to protect me from the tribulation. I like the Rapture story. I like the Rapture fairy tale. Hell, it's as good as, maybe a little better than Cinderella and Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Unfortunately, it doesn't have any relevance. It doesn't have any merit, and it doesn't come from the Bible. And so I looked up Rapture in the Bible, couldn't find it anywhere. So I started looking around here a little bit. This Rapture thing started about 1843, got started by some guy over in Scotland. I forgot his name now. But they're citing a couple of scriptures. So they go to the Bible, and they cite the Bible. And like Billy Graham, the Bible says... They get real emotional. You know, the Bible says, and then they cite Matthew 24, verse 40, I believe it was. Yeah. It says right here, and then shall two be in the field, and one shall be taken, and the other one left. Verse 41, two women shall be grinding at the mill, the one shall be taken, and the other one left. Watch you therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord doth come. All right. So when Jesus comes back, these people are going to be raptured off. We don't know where they're going, but they're going to be raptured off someplace. Some people say hell, some people say Peter, some people say someplace else. And they're going to be protected. And I think that's a hell of a neat idea, and I'd like to be in that group over there. Now, the problem with that is that, and here's a guy named Tim LaHaye, he wrote a book called Left Behind. or don't get left behind, or you've been left behind. I forgot exactly how it works. Anyway, they tell a story in there about these people are riding on an airplane, and all of a sudden they just disappear. You know, you're looking at the seat next to you, and you're talking to this guy, and all of a sudden he just disappears. And somebody brought up the subject, oh my God, what if the pilot's one of these evangelical Christians? What if the pilot gets raptured off? Then who's going to be flying the airplane? Well, we've got the co-pilot. What if they're both Christians? Well, then you got the flight engineer. What if all three of them are Christians and they're raptured off? Uh-oh. That leaves the rest of us on our own, doesn't it? I thought that was kind of cute. God, these fairy tales are just real cute, aren't they? They just go on and on. There's just no end to this madness, is there? Makes me wonder, you know, sometimes, have I woken up from my dream or am I still dreaming? Well, anyway, here's the moral of the story. Look at that scripture again. It doesn't tell you when. It says that there's going to be two women and one's taken and the other one's left. When does that occur? That's what we don't know. Don't know when it occurs. Well, in 2 Thessalonians tells us the answer. I don't know if I can find it here in the last few seconds that I've got here, but in 2 Thessalonians, it's talking about the time frame. And in that time frame, it's when the Messiah returns. Those that are written in the Lamb's Book of Life are going to be taken up into the clouds and then descend down on the Mount of Olives. They will be changed in an instant in the twinkling of an eye. And that's when they're converted from mortal to immortal. So that's the answer to the rapture story. But 70 million of you are out there believing in the fairy tale called the rapture. Well, God love you anyway. Hey, listen, we're about out of time, so I'm going to remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard in more than 112 countries daily worldwide over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian, non-commercial law school, and is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and a compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Your time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.